It was just 6 days ago that President Trump signed Senate Bill 47, which got the final name, the John D. Dingell Jr. Conservation Management and Recreation Act. The bill runs to hundreds of pages and protects chunks of land all over the country from development and exploitation. That includes stretches of Rogue River tributaries, a new Devil's Staircase wilderness in Oregon, and much more. Let's get a sense of what got included in the final bill from three organizations very interested in the outcome. From Cascadia Wildlands, we welcome Josh Laughlin, the executive director. Hi, Josh.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Sure. From Oregon Wild, we welcome Eric Fernandez, the wilderness program manager. Hi, Eric.
Good morning.
And from Trout Unlimited, we welcome Kyle Smith, the Oregon field coordinator. Hello, Kyle.
Thanks for having me.
So let's get from each of you a general reaction about this bill and what's in it and how long you've been waiting for something like this. Kyle, let's start with you.
Sure. So, you know, I think as anglers, we all rely on high-quality habitat for fish. So passage of this bill was, a major win for us. You look at the names that were protected by this bill, and they're some of the most iconic fisheries in Oregon, from the Chetco, the Malala, section of the Nestucca, Elk River. It's just a huge win for anglers and for sportsmen across Oregon. So this was a big deal for us.
Eric Fernandez from Oregon Wild, give us your initial impressions.
Yeah, you know, passage of the Oregon Wildlands Act is a big deal. It's good news for those who like clean drinking water, old growth forests, wildlife habitat. I think we all owe Senator Wyden and others in the delegation a debt of gratitude for working for the last 10 years to get this across the finish line. So it's good news. It's a small but important step in the right direction. When it comes to protecting our natural treasures in Oregon, wilderness is the gold standard. And unfortunately, we lag way behind all of our neighboring states in how much wilderness we've protected. So even environmental progressive bastion of Idaho, sarcasm intended, has protected twice as much as Oregon has. So this helps, and this is a step in the right direction, but we've got a lot of work to do to really make sure our natural treasures are protected for future generations of people and wildlife.
Sarcasm intended, I realize, is what you said. Okay, well, we'll explore the numbers in just a bit. I want to get a response now from Josh Laughlin as well about just an overall look at the bill and your response to it.
Sure. Well, it's been a long slog over 10 plus years to permanently protect a number of these iconic places here in Oregon. And residents from across the state and really the country continue to be excited about what was safeguarded for generations to come. Some of these iconic areas, the Lower Rogue River and Chetco and Malala, Elk River, Devil's Staircase Wilderness. Really excited about the inventory that's been really boosted here for residents in the state.
Josh, why now? I mean, you mentioned that this had been 10 years in the making for some parts of this. What got the stars aligned for this Congress to pass this bill so overwhelmingly?
Sure. Well, these are efforts that, again, have been worked on for 10 plus years. Devil's Staircase actually dates back to the 80s. It was on the Oregon Wilderness Bill back in the mid-1980s and never got the protection it deserved back then. And, you know, there's been a real chorus across the country of residents that want to see some of these iconic areas protected forever for their outstanding water quality and large old-growth forests and wild salmon and terrestrial habitat for imperiled species. And they were reintroduced time and time again by our elected officials here, Representative DeFazio and Senators Wyden and Markley, and they continued to persist back in Washington, D.C., and that momentum continued to build. And again, like you said, the stars aligned, and they crossed the finish line.
So let's talk in specifics about Devil's Staircase. Both Cascadia Wildlands and Oregon Wild make a big deal about this Devil's Staircase on their websites. Eric Fernandez, it's a wilderness designation, and you're a wilderness program manager at Oregon Wild. Tell us about Devil's Staircase and the things that make it unique.
Yeah, it's a pretty special place. So if anyone's familiar with the Oregon Coast Range, you know, there's not a lot of intact old growth forest left. You look at Google Earth, you'll see clear cuts up and down every direction in the Coast Range. And then there's this big green blob that has still got a lot of massive old growth trees. That's the Devil's Staircase area. It has great wildlife habitat. The trees in Devil's Staircase store carbon for centuries and centuries as they grow fast and big. So it's a really unique area. It's so rugged. That's probably one of the reasons why it wasn't logged over the years. It also took advocates and citizens and organizations like ours defending it from the chainsaw over the years until we got it protected. Interestingly, we were going back through some old documents and found brochures to try to protect this area going all the way back to the early 1980s. And so it's been a long time coming, and we're glad that the trees were still standing. So glad to see it protected.
How big an area protected with the Devil's Staircase Wilderness?
It's about 30,000 acres, okay. Which, you know, for the average person who lives on less than an acre of land, that sounds like a lot. But again, when you look at the state of Oregon, it's a 62 million acre state, and we have about 16 million acres of public land, and so it's modest in size, but it's a pretty special place, and it's definitely unique in the Coast Range. There's nothing else like it in Oregon.
This is the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking once again about the recent public lands bill that emerged from Congress and was signed by the president 6 days ago on March 12th. It became law under the name the John D. Dingell Jr. Conservation Management and Recreation Act. We're getting input and responses from Trout Unlimited, Oregon Wild, and Cascadia Wildlands. And you can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone. Send your emails to jx@jeffnet.org. Kyle Smith, the Oregon Field Coordinator for Trout Unlimited, what were some of the areas that your group was most interested in?
You know, one that we haven't talked about yet that I think definitely deserves mention is the Frank and Jeannie Moore Wild Steelhead Special Management Area that was designated on a tributary of the North Umpqua on Steamboat Creek. It's about 100,000 acres, this special management area, and it basically prioritizes management for fish. So anytime the Forest Service wants to do any sort of management action up there, they have to think about what impact it's going to have for the steelhead and Chinook that use Steamboat Creek as a spawning tributary. It also honors one of or two of Oregon's treasures in Frank and Jeannie Moore. Frank is a World War II veteran that landed on the beaches of Normandy during World War II, and his wife Jeannie is an amazing biologist and has taken a special interest in some of the wild flowers and plants on Steamboat Creek. So just an amazing place. The North Umpqua is kind of world famous as the graduate school of fly fishing for steelhead, and to protect Steamboat Creek in this way is a huge win for anglers.
I noticed that.
I think the other one.
The bill text actually contains in the whereas's section for the Frank and Jeannie Moore Wild Steelhead Special Management Area something of a short bio for Frank and Jeannie Moore, which is kind of fun. You were going to talk about another area that was of interest.
Yeah, another one that's special to my heart, and I think a lot of the folks in Southern Oregon, is the Elk River designation protections for tributaries of Elk River as wild and scenic. It basically locks in protections for the south side of that river, which is another green blob, as Eric said, on the southern Oregon coast. One of the darkest you're looking at an aerial view, one of the darkest green areas on the southern Oregon coast, and a real special place for Chinook salmon and winter steelhead.
The Elk River comes to the ocean at Port Orford, right?
It does, yeah.
That Elk River, okay, yeah. Between Elk Rivers and Elk Creeks, you can get all lost on bodies by that name in Oregon. But this is the one we're talking about that got protected.
It is, yeah, and it's one that's well known to anglers, kind of across Oregon. You head down there in October, November, and you'll find up to 100 people right there at the mouth of the Elk where it meets the ocean, with all kinds of fishing gear in their hands, trying to catch fall Chinook as they come in. Literally on the waves of the ocean crashing into Elk River. And so by protecting these tributaries upstream from the mouth of the ocean with the ocean. You know, we're ensuring that the habitat protections for these fall Chinook are locked in for future generations, and that we continue to have just a remarkable fishery resource and really just a clean drinking water resource for the Southern Oregon coast.
Let's explore some of the things that this bill didn't accomplish. I mean, there are obviously always things on a wish list for any conservation groups. And Eric Fernandez, let me turn back to you, because you were talking about how Oregon protects fewer acres than a lot of other states.
Yeah. So if you compare Oregon to our neighboring states and how much of our state has been permanently protected, only 4% of Oregon has been protected. And compare that to Washington, which has protected 10% of their state. Idaho is at 10%. More progressive state, California, has protected 15%. So we have more of a history of not protecting our natural treasures here in Oregon. So good to take a step in the right direction to rebalance that with the Oregon Wildlands Act. But also, you know, I think to your question, unfortunately, there was one area that was in this legislation that slipped out at the last minute, and that was the Wild Rogue Wilderness, which has been also in the works for about 10-plus years. Even at times, the timber industry supported that. We had worked out a compromise with them, and then they changed their mind and decided they didn't want to support it, which was unfortunate. And in an interesting political maneuver, just recently before the bill passed, Congressman Walden reached out beyond the borders of his congressional district over into Congressman DeFazio's district and yanked the Wild Rogue Wilderness out of this bill. So that was pretty disappointing to a lot of Oregon Wild members and a lot of fans of the Wild Rogue. So we're optimistic that will still cross the finish line before too long. Senator Wyden has mentioned multiple times since then that he is committed to seeing it across the finish line and ensuring that the Rogue River is an area that it so deserves protection. You know, world-class salmon runs, world-class rafting and hiking. So definitely an area deserving of protection. And, disappointing to see that didn't cross the finish line. But lots of good areas did cross the finish line. So,
Eric, you said that the timber industry had been behind the Wild Rogue Wilderness and then changed positions?
Correct. Yeah, we had there was a fair bit of media a couple of years back about how we all sat down, made some changes to the proposal, worked out an agreement, shook hands, and then several years later, they changed their mind and decided they didn't want to support it. I have other more colorful descriptions of that, but that's the ready for radio version.
Okay, I appreciate that version of it, too. We're talking to Eric Fernandez at Oregon Wild, Josh Laughlin at Cascadia Wildlands, and Kyle Smith at Trout Unlimited about the passage of that big, big public lands bill that was voted on so overwhelmingly by both the Senate and the House in that order. Senate Bill 47 became the John D. Dingell Jr. Conservation Management and Recreation Act to honor John Dingell, who died while the bill was approaching its final passage. You can join us on the exchange with your questions, comments, thoughts about areas that are protected or not protected by this bill. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Josh, there was also some recreation area near Malala that got left out of the final bill, wasn't there?
There was. And that's one of the areas along with the Rogue that we're continuing to work on to ensure that it's permanently protected for generations to come. Without protecting the wildlands around a river system, you're really not protecting that water body. As you know, and listeners know, the wildlands, filter and purify drinking water, and it's critical that we protect those landscapes around the river system. So there's an ongoing effort to safeguard those wildlands around the Malala, which is southeast of Portland, and provides an incredible wildlands and river opportunity for recreation enthusiasts. And that Malala River system actually provides municipal drinking water for a number of communities like Canby, southeast of Portland.
We have an email here from Becca in Lane County who writes, great news. These lands must not be federal because it sounds like a lot of BLM lands may be in danger. These were federal lands, but is there a sharp difference that you find between how BLM versus Forest Service lands and other federal lands were dealt with in this, Josh?
Well, the legislation is pretty clear. Once an area is designated as either a wilderness or wild and scenic river system, it's protected for generations to come. Like was mentioned earlier, is the gold seal protection layer for our federal public land. So whether it's BLM or Forest Service, they have to manage it in the same capacity. And again, that's to protect it. But in general, the BLM operates under some different federal statutes that the Forest Service does that emphasize reckless logging projects oftentimes. So to be able to build in some of these protection measures for places like tributaries to the Lower Rogue, which flow through BLM lands, we're incredibly excited about that opportunity now.
Let's talk a little more about some of the other features of the bill with Kyle Smith at Trout Unlimited, because the Land and Water Conservation Fund, which we've done several interviews on here because of the way it seems to be there and then not at the end of every September, it seems like it's got a little bit of a buffering from that annual process now.
It did. So, you know, Land and Water Conservation Fund is a national program that takes money from offshore gas and oil drilling and repurposes it for public land protection, ongoing maintenance, those kinds of things. And that fund was permanently reauthorized with the passage of this new act, but it didn't receive permanent funding. So that's kind of the next battle on the horizon for Land and Water Conservation Fund, is to ensure that every year, now that it's authorized every year, we need to make sure it's funded as well.
All right, so the LWCF won't cease to exist every October 1st, but it might not necessarily have any money. So in other words, we built a garage, we won't necessarily have a car in it every October 1st.
That's a good way of putting it, yeah. We want a Ferrari parked in there.
I bet you do. But, I mean, the LWCF is an interesting mechanism. Describe for the folks who might not be familiar with the Land and Water Conservation Fund where the money comes from for land protections.
Yeah, so as I mentioned earlier, the funds are derived from profits that private companies make while drilling offshore for oil and gas. You know, they take a percentage of that revenue stream and designate it for purchasing new tracts of public land, protecting or maintaining operation and maintenance of existing facilities and the like.
So let's talk about some of the other things in the bill. And this would be, are there any poison pills in the bill? Eric Fernandez, I mean, based on the vote, it doesn't seem like anybody had to agree to a massive clear cut or a valley filled with oil to get what they wanted.
Yeah, you know, there's some smellier portions of the bill coming out of states like Alaska and elsewhere. But there was a lot of moderating and negotiating that went on to try to get a bill that you could pass through the Senate with a vote of 92-8. So Oregon didn't have any poison pills, and I think that's what we were focused on here at Oregon Wild. So we were able to keep it pretty clean in Oregon. There's one component here in Central Oregon that was not great, but also not a poison pill. So pretty clean for the Oregon side. Some provisions in Alaska that may help privatize some land might not be good for wildlife refuges, et cetera. But it's a pretty compromised, moderated bill by the time it's finished.
So we've been talking about the portion of it. It's Section 1205 of the bill, Oregon Wildlands. This was a standalone bill for what, 10 years or so?
Yeah. Exactly. And there were a couple different iterations as we made compromises and negotiated with various different interests. But the Oregon part of this was the Oregon Wildlands Act, exactly. Mm-hmm. And that included protections for places like the Nistucca River, which we haven't mentioned. That's in the North Coast range of Oregon, which has very, very few protected rivers. So glad to see that happen. Clean drinking water for different communities. And, you know, again, trying to take a step forward to protect that imbalance of how little we've done to protect our natural treasures here in Oregon.
Kyle Smith, you mentioned the Nestucca River too. What is so significant about the Nestucca?
Nestucca is a very popular fishery within kind of shooting or striking distance from Salem and Portland. So the winter steelheading there, it's also got a great fall Chinook run. So, it represents an exceptional fishery resource for the North Coast. And I think one thing that we haven't talked about that Oregon Wildlands really supports is kind of the recreation economy. So there are, countless guides and outfitters, also gas stations and restaurants and grocery stores that benefit from these kind of protections because they do lock in the exceptional fisheries values, kayaking, paddling, just outdoor recreation in general, bring people to these places and help prop up these often rural economies that kind of struggle sometimes to have those kind of resources in other ways.
Josh Laughlin at Cascadia Wildlands, I'll make the final question to you, which is where to from here? I can't imagine this. Well, as we talked about, it didn't cover everything all you guys wanted, but what are some of the next steps to let people know what's available out there and to seek further protections?
Sure. Well, our elected officials like Senator Wyden and Senator Merkley, Representative DeFazio, continue to want to hear from constituents about what they'd like to see permanently protected for generations to come. Actually, and tonight, Senator Wyden is going to be soliciting public input on Oregonians' interests in future public lands protections. These are places that would be safeguarded for forever. And up in Portland tonight, there'll be hundreds of people coming out talking about areas they want to see protected for their kids and their kids' kids. So it's pretty exciting, especially when we have leaders like this that are listening to their constituencies that really appreciate protected public land. So, yeah, we're grateful that our elected senators and Representative DeFazio are interested in pursuing new safeguards for our public lands.
Okay, so certainly not an ending here, but a significant step with Senate Bill 47, the John D. Dingell Jr. Conservation Management and Recreation Act. Josh Laughlin is Executive Director of Cascadia Wildlands. Eric Fernandez, the Wilderness Program Manager at Oregon Wild, and Kyle Smith, the Oregon Field Coordinator for Trout Unlimited. Thank you all for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.